Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stenciled on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Good morning, Acadiana, and welcome to the Fast and Furious edition of Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game, home of the LSU Tigers. And we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. We've got a jam-packed show for you today. Even though it's 1 hour, we're going to give you everything you need for the rest of your day. We got our good friend Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South, featured columnist. He's going to come up, help us break down National Signing Day. We'll also have Brady Amon for our old school wrestling talk. That'll be coming up at 10:32. Plus, we're going to squeeze in some Pelicans talk. Hey, they have made a trade. No, hold on. It's not Anthony Davis. It's one of the Morris brothers.
It's a trade, not the trade.
Yeah,
a trade.
It's a trade, not the trade. And we'll also talk about LSU men's basketball coming back and defeating Mississippi State on the road in Stark Vegas in overtime. So it'll be a jam-packed show, as always. But right now, we're going to start things off with National Signing Day, and we're going to welcome on our good friend, Connor O'Gara. Connor, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. You know, I had low expectations for Wednesday, but, you know, I think for the most part, they were at the very least met. Miami's punter definitely helped me meet those expectations.
You beat me to the punch, Connor. You beat me to that. Was going to be one of my questions. Let's start off there. I think if anyone won this signing period, it had to be Miami. For one, they were able to flip a commitment from Alabama to Miami, and that's a big get for Manny Diaz, the cornerback out of Daphne, which he was able to flip. That's a great thing, but the reason why I think Miami won the National Signing Day period is because of the ultra tatted up massive punter from Australia that they signed, who's become a viral sensation. What can you tell us about the punter from Miami, brother?
Okay, just so from what I've been able to dig up from reading, you know, like the Sun Sentinel story that was on him that pretty much went viral with that picture where you're like, wait a minute, what? He is, in fact, in his mid-20s, Lewis Headley, who's his new Miami punter. So he's a junior college transfer from City College of San Francisco. So the possibility of him possibly, like, being in prison for 10 years and then deciding, oh, I want to play college football, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility. I don't want to judge people based on their appearance, but I'm just saying I've seen people who look less I haven't seen a whole lot more college players who fit the bill than that. So
he looks like he walked off the set of HBO's Oz. That's what he looks like to me.
Yeah, I made the joke on Twitter that Miami's just out here signing dudes from the longest yard, pretty much. he is tatted up in ways that you usually don't see, but a big dude. Apparently he, redshirted in 2018, and he's going to make an immediate impact. That's the hope. He averaged 38.6 yards per punt when he last played in 2017. So maybe he can build on that and help Miami, like, you know, have a decent season down there in the first year of the Manny Diaz era. I don't know, but I'm very optimistic now.
I'm just waiting to see him, after the punt, run down the field and try to knock someone's head off a la Sean Taylor in the Pro Bowl. That's what I'm hoping happens.
Yeah, I think we're going to get at least one of those. The Pat McAfee for the brand thing, it's coming. I think we're all going to be on the lookout for that. Every time, that's going to be the most entertaining thing about Miami next year is probably when they punt the ball. So we'll have many opportunities for that.
We're on with Connor O'Gara. He's a senior columnist for Saturday Down South. Let's talk about another team from the state of Florida who did not have such a great National Signing Day, and that's Florida State. And you tweeted about this, Connor. They lost a four-star QB recruit to Maryland. They dropped one scholarship quarterback in Francois for off the field, for an off the field incident. My favorite of the things that you talked about, claimed that they were DBU after finishing 119th versus the pass. They photoshopped MLK's arm doing a tomahawk chop, ignored fans' concerns about hiring Kendall Briles, won five games last year. All of the above. What the hell is going on in Tallahassee?
Florida State's the most desperate program in college football, and I just don't even think it's close. And, you know, I've been just blown away by how bad they have gone about things. It's one thing to lose games, you know, like everybody has a bad season. Like Florida had a four-win season, and, you know, Nebraska's coming off a really bad season. But they're not embarrassing themselves in the same way that Florida State is. Everything that you can do wrong off the field and really on the field, because Florida State finished dead last in the country in terms of penalty yards per game. So they're just doing everything wrong to shoot themselves in the foot. And, you know, I go back to the old saying of attitude reflects leadership, the old Remember the Titans thing. And I question the leadership of Willie Taggart right now. I question the direction of the program when you go back-to-back classes without signing a quarterback recruit. The guy that was supposed to be your starter, you just had to kick off the team because of off-the-field issues with the domestic dispute, and you're left with one scholarship quarterback for a program that, quite frankly, doesn't know how to protect a quarterback. So what makes us think that they're going to keep that one healthy? So I just, like, it blows me away that Florida State, you know, continues to do things to make itself look like a total embarrassment for its fans. I feel bad for their fans right now. That's the thing is, like, if you're a Florida State fan, you know, you've been used to this level of success for so long, and they just ended the longest bowl streak in the country, and all of a sudden your program is just in dire straits, and it's not looking good in year two of the Willie Taggart era. And, you know, the problem that I have, you know, you can claim DBU all you want. I get that. But you got to understand the timing of it, right? I mean, it's one thing to talk about all these players that you have in the NFL, who, by the way, Derwin James, not exactly happy with the idea of Jimbo Fisher claiming him as a defensive back that he recruited. That's a different story for a different time. Or was that Jalen Ramsey? I don't remember. One of the two was not happy about that. But anyways, claiming your DBU after finishing 119th out of 129th in the country in the against the pass is not a good look. It's the timing of it. And Florida State just still is thinking that it's like one of these powers in college football and is thinking it's one of the big boys. And it's not, because big boys don't get smacked in the face by Syracuse, and they don't behave like this off the field. That's the issue that I have right now with Willie Taggart's program.
Connor, let's talk about the Big Ten. You had tweeted out the information. You know, you compared it to SEC and how it was even more lopsided for this signing class than it has been in years past. No, they did not have a single team program with a class in the top five. Only had five in the top 25, and they only had 7 5-star recruits commit to the entire conference, whereas the SEC had 20. What's going on there? You know, we've been told Jim Harbaugh is supposed to be this excellent recruiter. I know Urban Meyer stepped away from Ohio State, but he built them into a national championship contender as well, only a few years ago. Why is the Big Ten kind of lagging behind when it comes to National Signing Day?
I think a lot of it is Ohio State-based. I think the fact that Ohio State signed a very small class. I mean, only signed 17 recruits, and you knew that this was going to be a transition year. I mean, you're talking about one of the great recruiters, not just currently when he was, you know, part of the sport, but Urban Meyer is one of the great recruiters of all time. I mean, there's really no debating about that. And when you take him away, obviously your ability to hold on to recruits, that's going to be a big topic of discussion. Ohio State ends up losing a 4-star offensive lineman to Virginia Tech, which is kind of a weird thing that happened when he was considered their top target left. And so you have something like that happen, and, you know, you just kind of wonder, all right, Urban Meyer was this unbelievable recruiter who really kind of, I mean, he set the tone for the Big Ten and the ability to get 5-star athletes year in, year out. You know, he really was competing with Alabama and Georgia kind of on an annual basis for one of the top spots nationally. And all of a sudden, Ohio State drops back to number 14 in the country. That's their lowest ranking since 2010. And then Michigan actually finished with the highest ranked class in the Big Ten, though you wouldn't know it just because they didn't have a bunch of guys they were trying to sign on Wednesday. And this really wasn't, you know, an offseason of Jim Harbaugh talking about his recruits. You know, they didn't have the signing of the stars events or anything like that. He didn't even address the media on Wednesday. So it was a very quiet day for the Big Ten. The Big Ten didn't sign a single unsigned recruit that was ranked in the top 100 on Wednesday. So if you just kind of put all those things into the equation, it's been a very tumultuous offseason, I think, for James Franklin at Penn State with all the roster turnover that they've had. And, yeah, they still finished with a very solid class. But, I mean, they're just not competing with the SEC on that level. I mean, and that's what this comes down to. And, you know, the fact that the SEC lacked the coaching turnover that it usually has, I think, helped the SEC kind of distance itself from the pack. And I think that's just kind of a variety of things that led to why there's this significant noticeable gap in talent this year, more so than years past.
Wrong with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South. Connor, I just tell me a little bit, and you kind of jokingly tweeted this out yesterday while it was happening. When George Pickens flipped from Auburn to Georgia, that was a huge get for Georgia, helped them secure a top three recruiting class in the nation. Auburn players and Auburn recruits, though, weren't too thrilled about that and expressed their, let's say, disgust about what happened, even indicating that it was about money. It just seems to me, once again, you were talking about kind of Florida State. It seems we spend a lot of time talking about Auburn for all the wrong reasons as well.
Yeah, it just I didn't like that for the simple standpoint of, you know, I'm not saying that Georgia didn't offer, you know, George Pickens some money. I'm not saying that they did. I'm not saying either way that one team is cheating, one team is not. In the heat of the moment, though, that just comes off as so petty. When you lose out on a five-star recruit, and that's the first thing that you automatically assume. It's like, yeah, because this program is doing this, and your program never has. To assume those things, to me, is a bit unfair, and it's a bit biased, obviously. And I understand that players are going to be frustrated that they think that they're going to add this game changer, you know, as a five-star recruit, an in-state recruit, somebody that really has kind of a national name already that a lot of people were talking about. And I understand the frustration, but to me it just comes off as like, okay, you know, we're just upset, we're being sore losers right now, when, you know, there are a lot of programs out there that allegedly are doing this type of thing, and it's not just one program. And to assume that one program is doing it is, okay, I mean, unless you know the ins and outs and you've been around this recruit nonstop at every step of the way, that just comes off as being a little bit biased. So that's my main problem with it. You know, I understand that this stuff goes on and, you know, players talk and there's all the rumor mills are flying, especially when it's a surprising flip late in the process for a team like Georgia or a team like Alabama. But to me, it's like, you know, let's kind of back off this unless we have the substantial proof to say, like, yeah, this kid told me about this, and this is, you know, kind of where we're at with this whole situation. So Auburn didn't have the best day from that standpoint, from a PR standpoint. I bet there are a lot of people in the marketing department or the compliance department saying, hey, you guys need to delete those tweets because you can't have players, you know, accusing another program of dropping money to be able to sign a five-star recruit.
Connor, I want to wrap it up with this. LSU had a terrific class by all stretch of the imagination, a top five or top six class by most recruiting services. They got the number one recruit, or at least the number one cornerback, depending on who you ask, and Derek Stingley to sign in the early signing period. They got the number two running back recruit flipping from Georgia to them in the early signing period as well. And they finally ended the streak with Amit High, which they hadn't recruited a guy out of there since 2002. But it just seemed yesterday that softer-ish deciding to go to Alabama instead of LSU has put an entire damper on this terrific LSU signing class. From someone looking at it from the outside in, is that how it appears to you?
It's not necessarily what so much as it is who. If you're losing Softshore to a program like, I don't know, Texas or something like that, or Texas A&M, it's not that it makes the sting that much easier to absorb. You know, it's just the fact that it's to Alabama, and it's the fact that Nick Saban came into the state of Louisiana and got two of the top five kids in state. And that is a tough thing to look at, because that is the exact type of kid that usually doesn't leave the state and is usually ends up at LSU. And on the defensive line, that's what you think that Ed Orgeron is going to be able to recruit. And, you know, for the most part, he's been able to do that. I mean, I don't want to take away from what he's been able to do, but when it comes down to that, and that was pretty much how LSU's day was going to be judged. I know that they had a nice day outside of that, but that was the big one. And it kind of changed the perception. And that's a little bit of the thing with this February signing period, or this February signing day after the early signing period, and why it can kind of magnify some of those stories. Now, we'll see how his career plays out. And if he's part of, you know, shutting out the LSU offense a couple years from now, I think a lot of LSU fans will go back to this and just think, man, this was a really brutal loss to take on the recruiting trail. But, you know, at the same time, we're making a bigger deal of it because of when he signed and who he signed with. And I think that that's the toughest thing to stomach. You still got to remember that LSU signed a top five class. And those top five classes do not grow on trees. That's been the common phrase that people keep using. Oh, this kid doesn't, you know, these quarterbacks don't grow on trees. But to me, I think if you're an LSU fan, you kind of got to just, you know, take some of the good with the bad and appreciate the fact that you were able to get a kid like Stingley to stay in state, and you were able to put together really one of the best classes that they've had in a while. And this is a class that, you know, next year you're looking at, and they're number two in the country. So plenty of talent is coming to Baton Rouge, although Wednesday, yeah, obviously frustrating to see the way that things played out.
Connor, appreciate it as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
That's Connor O'Gara, senior columnist for Saturday Down South, breaking down National Signing Day for us. When we come back here on the Wrap Game with RP3, we're going to talk some Pels and some LSU men's basketball right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for LSU Tigers.
Randall for three. Good with the left hand, left of the top of the arc.
That ain't in the paint, but that was sweet. Pels now 55 points off the bench. Julius Randle with 25 of them.
Welcome back to Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. The New Orleans Pelicans stepped up and got the dub last night. 125-120 victory over the Chicago Bulls. And they've improved their record now to 24-31 overall on the season. And I know what you're going to tell me, Raymond, the Bulls are terrible. They're just terrible, as Charles Barkley would say, terrible. They've won 12 games. I'm aware. But still, for the Pels, with everything that's been going on, with all the drama involving the Anthony Davis, will they trade him? Will they not trade him? Will they make him sit on the bench and wear, just make him wear a suit and never play him for the rest of the year? Whatever happens, will Magic Johnson try to offer free movie tickets to them to sweeten the deal? All that stuff that's occurred, for them to be able to go out there and to get a W is still an impressive thing. Look, this team has been scrappy since Davis got injured with the finger issue, and they've done a nice job blocking out all the noise. Alvin Gentry, I've said it before, has done a terrific job as a coach in this stretch where not only Anthony Davis has been sidelined, they've had other players being banged up. Elfrid Payton, Maricek, Julius Randle was banged up for a couple of games as well. But it was a balanced attack. Jrue Holiday had 18 points, 11 assists, 6 rebounds. He's just such a good basketball player. Okafor continues to be a revelation, filling in for Davis, 13 points. Miller chipped in with 12, Williams with 12, and Diallo had 18, and then there was Julius Randle, who just went off, 31 points in 31 minutes of play. He also had 7 rebounds and 3 assists. So a terrific night for the Pels. And, you know, and here's the other thing. You know, it does not look like the Anthony Davis situation is going to happen. Now, there is talk that there's been buildup today and this morning about something happening with the New York Knicks. But we'll see there if that happens. But the Pels did make a trade where they traded Wesley Johnson to the Washington Wizards, who are in a full rebuild mode. And they got Markieff Morris. He's one of the Morris twins that used to play at Kansas. He's a decent NBA player. He's He's a decent number three, number four guy. He's going to get you good minutes. He's not as good as, say, Julius Randle, but it's a quality player, and the Wizards are in a complete rebuild. John Wall may miss all of next year. There's talk of Bradley Beal being shipped out. They already shipped out Otto Porter to Chicago. So the Wizards are in a rebuild mode, and the Pelicans were proactive. Sent out Wesley Johnson, a player that barely plays for them, to get a guy that will get considerable minutes for them. And don't be surprised if they made this move knowing that they may just bench Anthony Davis the rest of the way. So Morris could get a lot of that time and reps that Julius Randle will also receive. But it just wasn't all Pels last night on the hardwood that came up with a dub.
Waters dribbling from left to right hand, leaned over just outside the mid-circle. And with eight, he'll start to work. Goes to his right, cut off by Nick Weatherspoon. Four. Gets it to Reed. Three ball left of the arc. Bounces. Goes through. Good. Hit the left side of the rim. Went straight up and spun right through the net. 92-88. Naz Reed with a huge triple. He has 29 points. That's his second three-pointer of the game. And again, just the third for LSU tonight.
That was Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers, on the call last night. LSU would end up holding on for the 92-88 win on overtime over Mississippi State there in Stark Vegas. They have 18 wins now in the season. And it's a good win for them. It's on the road in the SEC against a team that's ranked in one of the major polls. I know the Bulldogs are not ranked in the AP, but they still were ranked in the coaches poll at number 21. So you go on the road and you beat a top 25 team, that's always something that you're going to pat yourself on the back for. They needed overtime. They showed some grit. And Naz Reed showed you what he's capable of last night. Look, this team did not shoot well from three-point range last night. The Tigers didn't. Will Wade's bunch. They still pulled out a victory on the road. Tremont Waters had 26 points. But everyone else kind of had an off night. Bigby Williams had 14 points, but Skylar Mays only had 7. Taylor only had 1. Javonte Smart only had 9, but yet Naz Reed, the guy that is the possible one and done, he's very special, and he showed you exactly how good he can be. 29 points, 9 boards, and 35 minutes of play. Tremendous effort by that young man. LSU gets the W, moves on. We'll host Auburn on Saturday. When we come back here on Rap Game with RP3, it'll be old school wrestling talk with our friend Brady Amon here on 103.7 The Game.
Gonna pay.
School wrestling talk with the tag team duo of RP3 and Brady.
Oh, hell yeah!
Ray is the former Demolition Fan Club president, Southeast Chapter.
The Demolition, walking disaster.
And the innovator of a devastating move called the Gator Lock. Brady is the 10-time Willow Street Wrestling Federation tag team champion. And he once shook hands with One Man Gang. Time for some old school wrestling talk.
And if the intro didn't give it away on today's edition of old school wrestling talk, we're going to be focused in on theme music, intro music, however you want to describe it, the music that best is best identified with your favorite wrestlers growing up. I'm Raymond Parks III, host of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm going to welcome on our good friend Brady Amon. Brady, how are you this morning, brother?
Man, I am pumped. That intro right there with all that music, just, I mean, it had me going down memory lane, man. That's That's some awesome stuff. How can you not be pumped to talk about this?
There it is. There it is. I agree, brother. I agree. But look, let's talk a little bit about, you know, for years there really wasn't theme music. And then in the 70s and in the early 80s, it was fairly typical for the marquee wrestlers to just use popular songs, right? They didn't. Yeah. This is before the Jim Johnston era at WWF turned WWE, the legendary composer of most of the best themes of all time. That's before then. Before then, it was the Fabulous Freebirds using, you guessed it, Freebird by Lynyrd Skynyrd, or the Road Warriors using Black Sabbath's Iron Man. Okay, so that was kind of what was in vogue for you growing up. What do you remember? Or do you have a preference, I guess, Brady? Do you have a preference? Do you like the guys that just came out with whatever popular music was at that time that kind of identified their shtick? Or do you prefer, like, the Jim Johnston composed theme songs?
Well, I mean, I kind of like them both because, I mean, I think, you know, the old school approach of just using, you know, whatever popular songs were at that time or whatever kind of fits your character, so to speak, I thought that worked well. But then, as you pointed out, when WWF started doing it and making it more personal to the wrestler, I think it became synonymous with that wrestler. And when you heard that song, and you didn't hear it a whole lot in, you know, in pop culture or whatever, you only heard it on wrestling because it was unique to those wrestlers. So you could hear, like you said, you'd hear Freebird out on the radio station or whatever, and you didn't always think of the Freebirds at the time. But if you did hear the Undertaker song, or you did hear that the glass breaking, you knew that was Stone Cold. So, yeah, I like them both, but I do definitely prefer kind of the new school approach because they made that song their own. Whereas I think back in the day, you know, there's a lot of wrestlers that used different songs that became popular because that's what it was at the time. You know, that music was just popular.
Right, and the other thing is that you still have some of the newer school guys that would use contemporary music. I remember Triple H used to come out to Motorhead, right? So
that
was even during the Johnston era, but that was Triple H's way of kind of standing out because, I mean, you put on Motorhead, you get amped up, you're ready to go. You know, the other thing I found interesting is that, and we'll get to Jim Johnston and his influence, and he created some of the greatest theme songs of all time. And before leaving the company in 2018 after 30 years. But two of the biggest guys, two of the most popular guys, and two of the greatest wrestlers of all time did not use composed modern composers, nor did they use contemporary music. Comes right to mind is Macho Man came out to Pomp and Circumstance.
Yeah.
And Ric Flair came out to the theme from 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, which I don't know the name of the song, but it's German. but
well, that's similar to how today Daniel Bryan comes out to Flight of the Valkyries. It's just these generic
cool
tunes.
Too.
Yeah,
right.
So similar in that instance.
Yeah, and you kind of have to appreciate that, you know, the guys that come out to the instrumental, because there's nothing to really sing along to, you know. Whereas you got these other ones that, you know, like the Game song. You know, you could sing along to that. You could sing along to Another One Bites the Dust by Junkyard Dog. But these ones that are just, like you said, Pomp and Circumstance, that's just it's a graduation song. But at the same time, it works.
Yes. Well, it worked perfectly for Macho Man because that just allowed him to just slowly walk down the ramp with his shades on and his hat or his crown or whatever it might have been, and him just take his time and just looking
and show
around.
Miss Elizabeth, yeah.
Right. Yeah. It worked perfect for his alter ego, so to speak, and the same thing for Ric Flair. And the great thing about the theme music for me, Brady, as a kid growing up watching wrestling, was when you hear, like, a lot of times back in the day they did this especially, is that they wouldn't tell you who was coming up. You know, they wouldn't over-promo, but then you would hear the music. You know,
and they
come back, and it would be like Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan would come back to the show, to the broadcast, and they'd go out and they'd have the scrub out there, you know, the guy out there that was just the guy that's going to get pinned in 3 minutes. And you're like, well, who's this guy going to wrestle? And then the boom, the music goes off, and you're like, oh, you get so excited because, like you said before, you would never hear their theme songs outside of watching them watching wrestling on television. You would never hear it in popular culture. It's not like it was being broadcast on the radio. So it was like, oh, and then you get all excited and you're like, oh, I can't wait. This is my favorite guy. Oh, I hate this guy. This is the, you know, the heel that I want to root against.
Yeah. Yeah. And it had that definite kind of, I don't know how you jump off your seat impact. Because yeah. if you're live in the arena and you hear, like I said, you know, going back to Stone Cold, you hear that glass shatter, you're a Stone Cold fan, you're jumping, you're getting up 10 feet high because Stone Cold's coming out. Same thing with Cena. You hear that little jazzy riff start off, you're like, oh, that's Cena, you know? And the same thing with the bad guys.
Oh, Brady, what have you done?
You knew this was coming. You had to know. Wrap it up!
Oh my God!
Like, oh, Brady! You just
too easy.
You just made Cody's. I think you just made Cody's year. He's getting married in less than 2 weeks, and his favorite wrestler is John Cena. He's got the shirt on and the hat on right now.
Oh my God!
What's funny? Since you brought up John Cena, who's definitely a more modern guy, there are a couple of theme songs today, including John Cena. There's this one. I don't know if you've heard. This is Bobby Roode, his entrance song, absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
See, those are those anthem theme songs. Those are my favorite. Those to me. Well, and then you can't forget, we also have stable entrances, guys that come out as big groups, kind of like we've got the Undisputed Era.
Shock the system.
See, I like themes as well. That, like Stone Cold, have that initial, kind of like Ric Flair has the woo, and Stone Cold has the glass. Now you've got guys, they still kind of use that same template, if you will. So there's my interjection about current theme songs that I enjoy.
Well, and I agree. If that initial note, you know, it's kind of like name that tune. I can name that tune in one note. You know, that's kind of how it was with wrestling, especially the really, really good popular songs. You knew it immediately. You knew it as soon as it hit, you know, when Mick Foley came out to the car crash. You knew immediately that that's Mick Foley.
Or when you heard Million Dollar Man laugh.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's, you know, and those are all, that's all new school stuff that, you know, like you said, just kind of happened in that new era when they kind of went away from using popular music. And I wonder if how much of that had to do with commercializing it and making it their own, or if it had to do with paying royalties, you know, if they, I mean, because, you know, we got into an era there, I guess early on, you could probably play, you know, the Freebirds could probably play Freebird without having to pay any royalties for it. Same thing with Junkyard Dog. But I wonder, as we got into the 80s and musicians started to care more and more about their music and how much money they were making, I wonder if it got to be too expensive. Well, for these companies to keep using their music.
Well, it was probably a combination of two. It was probably a combination of both things, Brady. It was probably a combination of all of a sudden having to pay royalty rights every time you played the music, and if you had to pay even extra if you played it during a broadcast, that you would be making money off of. So that played a role. And then I also think Vince McMahon had the foresight of, hey, I'm going to actually hire a full-time composer to create these themes for our guys because it's going to help build our brand. I mean, Johnston came on in 1985, so that's right around where WrestleMania is starting to blow up and WWF starts taking over the world. I don't think it's a coincidence that all of a sudden Vince McMahon decided to have a composer on staff.
Yeah. And I like, you know, some of the newer guys, they're not using, not necessarily using like the composed stuff, but they're using like some obscure songs. Like, I think of Bray Wyatt. I think he's got a fantastic entrance, a fantastic song. I just love that theme song. And that's actually a legit band that actually, you know, wrote that song. So I think some of these newer guys are actually like going out and trying to find maybe some indie groups or some lesser known people. And you saw that a lot, I guess, the last 6 or 7 years where Vince would start WrestleMania with a song and he would pump the band up even though you never heard of it. And that was Vince's way to kind of cross over a little bit. So I agree. He kind of had that foresight with creating those songs for specific wrestlers. And then also in the last couple of years, they've had the foresight of, hey, let's set up a little record, a little deal with a record company where we can push this one artist and they'll become popular just because this is that, you know, that person's theme song.
Yes, Vince McMahon has never passed up an opportunity to make money.
Not at all.
Well, brother, let's get right to it, man. We talked a lot, and we mentioned a lot of our favorites. We're even going to have Cody in on this. We're going to have Cody bring his top five as well. His top five.
Can I guess Cody's top five real quick?
It'd be John Cena.
Cena 5, Cena 4, Cena 3, Cena 2, Cena 1.
You're close. You're not far off. Cena does appear in the top five twice. I'll give you that much.
No joke.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll give Cody a couple minutes to finish out his top five. I'll start with you, okay. Brady. Give me your top five, starting five up to one, as always, brother.
Okay. All right. Number five, Stone Cold. It's newer school to me, but I like it. Like I said, that glass shattering. And you knew immediately that Stone Cold was coming out, and it was going to be a very entertaining match either way, or even a very entertaining segment that he's just talking. Number four, the real American, Hulk Hogan. That was a song that every kid sang in the 80s. I mean, you just sang it. You knew it word for word. You knew when the song came that it was Hulk Hogan, and you loved it. Number three, I'm going with the legend, Ric Flair. Like you said, the song hits. You hear the woo, he comes out and he takes his time walking down to the ring apron. He's got the long, shiny robe. It's glitter everywhere. It's sparkling. He does his little slow walk. He twirls, shows off his robe, and then keeps going, does his business. I thought it was a fantastic entrance, a good song, perfect song for him. Number two, The Undertaker. Every entrance The Undertaker has ever made, Even if you go back to when he was just not the Undertaker, but the American Badass, I still appreciate those. But his true Undertaker, with the Death Toll song, the slow march he makes his way down there, and when he incorporates the Druids with the fire, I love that. That entrance is always one of my favorite ones. I get chills just thinking about it. Number one, this is a personal favorite. Obviously, my favorite wrestler of all time. Junkyard Dog, another one bites the dust. Now it's a mainstream song, very popular at the time, but something about Junkyard Dog, when I hear that song, I think about him immediately. I flash back to him coming into the ring, doing his little dance, seeing all the old women on the front row get up and start dancing with him. it's just one of those songs that when I hear it, that's who I think of. I think of Junkyard Dog, even though it really wasn't "quote unquote," his song. At first, you know, first he came out with "Bad Leroy Brown," and then Bill Watts switched him over to another one, "Bites the Dust." And you know, I'll never forgive Vince McMahon for changing his song to whatever he grabbed him cakes or whatever he made him do when he got to WWE. But another one, "Bites the Dust," Junkyard Dog entrance. Every time I heard that song, you heard that bass line, no, 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 no. You knew it was Junkyard Dog, and I got up and started dancing.
That's a good list, Brady. That's a good list. I'm going to give you my five, and we'll close out with Cody. We'll let Cody go last.
All right.
My number five is Hulk Hogan, you know, America. It was the quintessential 1980s Cold War kind of pump-you-up theme song, and it was perfect for Hulk Hogan and Hulkamania. And I still hear it today, and it just reminds me of my childhood. So that's number five. Number four is one of the more badass theme songs for me, and that has to be Stone Cold's. When you hear the glass and you come out, and I wasn't even that big into wrestling during the Attitude Era, but that theme song was perfect for him, and that was by far the best theme song of the entire Attitude Era of the WWF. Number three for me, you already mentioned him, Ric Flair. He comes out to 2001, A Space Odyssey. He does the slow walk. I just see him slowly walking down, and he's got the sequin robe on. He just slowly comes down and lets everyone look at him, and you know, when you hear that, you're like, oh, here he comes. The Nature Boy is going to give us an hour-long bout, and he's going to win it with a figure four lock at the end. Number two for me, I had to go with Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man. I absolutely love It's All About the Money. It's his laugh. It's the sign of the money. He's got the backup singer singing. He's talking about everyone has a price. His theme song represented him to a T. His character, everything was perfected with that theme song. There was only one that was better, in my opinion, and that was, you had already mentioned him as well, Brady, it's The Undertaker. It's The Undertaker's theme song. You hear the bells toll like that, and you just get just so animated, raring to go. And in your case, it sounds like maybe doing some dishes or reorganizing the kitchen.
Yes.
So that's my top five, brother. Go ahead, Cody. Get in there.
Real easy for you, fellas. First, number five, John Cena's original entrance theme, Word Life, Basic Thuganomics. You know, if you've heard that, you know. John Cena raps his own theme songs, just so you know. That is him rapping as well. So number five, John Cena, Word Life.
That's not something to brag about, but continue.
No, John Cena's a great rapper. Number four, Shawn Michaels, The Heartbreak Kid. Oh. I'm a sexy boy.
Oh, like
I'm not
that.
Your boy toy. Of course, I love that. And then Shawn Michaels' Best Friend comes in at number three, Triple H. I like both of Triple H's theme songs. Time to Play the Game and King of Kings. Depends on if he's wearing, you know, wrestling gear or a suit, whichever one. I love both of those. So Triple H gets number three. Number two, you got No Chance. No Chance in Hell. I love Vince McMahon's theme song. It is another one of those that, like you were saying about Flair, it just encapsulates his character. Everything is just, it is Vince McMahon. And of course, obviously, my number one theme song, My Time Is Now. From the greatest of all time, Mr. John Cena. Oh, never give up.
The greatest of all time. Brady, respond quickly. Please.
I do like that he brought up Vince McMahon because I was thinking about that one. It's a great song. And then the way Vince McMahon kind of sells it with the way he walks down
right.
through his ring apron, you know, throwing those legs around.
Talk about pompous.
I just love that. And you know what? Shawn Michaels, I agree. I'll give you props on that.
I'll give you props, too, on Shawn Michaels. Another one that none of us mentioned that deserved to be honorable mentioned is Bret the Hitman Hart's theme.
Yeah.
That was excellent as well.
That
nearly
screech.
Made my number five. If it wasn't for Hogan being such a sentimental favorite for me from my childhood, Bret Hart's theme song would have been number five. Brady.
Yeah, I had about four or five honorable. I mean, Roddy Piper's another one, the bagpipe.
Yeah.
If you remember that? It was just so annoying, but... You know, when you heard the bagpipes, you know it was Roddy Piper. Yeah, there was a lot of really great ones. It was hard to narrow it down to five. I probably could have did a top two. But then, you know, we don't have all day.
Brady, appreciate you as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
All right, man. Looking forward to it.
Old School Wrestling Talk. It's in the bag. We'll wrap up the rap game with RP3, Fast and Furious Edition, after this break right here on 103.7 The Game. You're home for the LSU Tigers. Just a reminder to keep it live and local right here on 103.7 The Game. Following our show will be the Jim Rome Show from 11 to 2. Then the Jordy Holberg Show with Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4. The brother Ben Love will be live from the Taproom River Ranch to host Bumper to Bumper Sports from 4 to 7. And then we'll have Astro Line on the night, guys, 7 to 8. I want to thank Brady Amon for coming on for some old school wrestling talk. I want to thank Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South to come on to break down National Signing Day. Look, if you didn't get enough of recruiting talk and National Signing Day coverage, make sure to tune in this Saturday for the final shows of On the Trail with Ben Love and Shay Dixon. That'll be Saturday, 9 a.m., and then Sunday at 8 a.m. Y'all have an excellent day. We'll talk to you tomorrow. See you then.